Did you know the risk of cancer does not stop at the scene of the fire? Firefighters are constantly exposed to diesel exhaust fumes and other airborne toxins that get trapped inside the station, leading to cancer. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip. Through the combination of MagnaGrip exhaust removal systems and AirHawk air purification systems, only MagnaGrip eliminates 100% of all cancer-causing toxins within the station. Learn more at MagnaGrip.com.
In the world of firefighting and public safety, reliability is key. That's why for over two decades, first responders nationwide have trusted the Fire Store as their go-to source for essential equipment, apparel, and accessories. From top-of-the-line firefighting gear like helmets, boots, and thermal imaging cameras, the Fire Store has it all, tailored to the specific needs of our heroes on the front lines. But they don't stop there. Their extensive selection also includes EMS supplies, safety apparel like flame-resistant clothing and high-visibility gear, as well as a wide array of tools from hand tools to vehicle extrication tools, supporting public safety professionals in their duties. Partnered with industry leaders, the Fire Store's commitment to quality and excellence is unmatched, because when it comes to protecting communities, there's no room for compromise. Join the thousands of first responders who rely on the Fire Store. Visit thefirestore.com online or in-store today. The Fire Store, your reliable partner for fire and public safety equipment.
Greetings. Welcome to the Women in Fire Radio Show. Today we'll be talking about therapy and support dogs at the fire service. Thank you to Fire Engineering for allowing Women in Fire to be part of their radio show series. I'm Lisa Baker, retired battalion chief, and I'm the Southwest trustee for Women in Fire. Today I have Amanda Bowen, who is a battalion chief in the City of Memphis, Tennessee Fire Department, and Sunny Madsen, who's with the American Canine Caring Angels. So I'm just going to let them go ahead and give their brief bios, and then we'll get started. Amanda, do you want to start?
Sure. Amanda Bowen. Like you said, I'm a battalion chief with Memphis Fire Department. I have been with them 23 years next month, so most of my career. I started off as a firefighter paramedic and moved up the ranks and got the complete and total awesome job of being Wilson's handler back in 2019. I can't believe it's been that long already. And so I now also, and also in conjunction with being the coordinator for the program, for our Comfort Canine program, I also am over our EMS training department at the Training Academy.
Thanks, Amanda.
I'm Sunny Madsen. I am the founder of Canine Caring Angels Therapy and Service Dogs, and also just basic obedience. And we've been around since about 2011. We were the first organization in the history of the United States to have a trained, certified therapy dog at a fire station. And we've continued to work with the fire departments and first responders ever since then. And we have found a huge value in the therapy of a therapy dog.
Thank you for that. So how did the idea of therapy dogs in the fire service actually develop? How did it become a... Because right now, if you read anything online and stuff, there's more and more agencies that are trying to actually start a program with therapy dogs.
I know for me, it was 2018, and we'd actually had a town hall meeting with our chief, Chief Sweat, and we had just had call after call after call after bad call, and I was seeing these guys struggle. And it was really hard to watch because some of these guys we were kind of close with, and we lost several of them. They left the job. Let me rephrase that. They left the job due to the traumatic issues they'd been through and the things they'd seen. And I knew how I am about my dogs and how much I love them. And I was like, man, if we could get something like that going. And so I went to Chief Sweat after the town hall meeting. I said, Chief, could we do this? Could we start a program? And it just so happens, Miss Sunny, that she had just met Wally. And so at Women in Fire. So I know, right? Serendipitous. So she was so supportive. It's like, go, and gave me free rein to make this program happen. And that's how we got started. So very quickly on that, we tried my German Shepherd. He just didn't particularly like it. And so we talked about doing like a rescue dog. And we just weren't sure. And she was like, well, how about we try and find a doodle because of the hypoallergenic properties they have. And so I was like, well, I'm just going to call. I called Captain Best up at, he used to be at Fairfax County Fire, and he was one of the handlers, and asked him about their program. And that's how I got hooked up with Miss Sunny and Karen Campbell, who was his breeder. And the rest is kind of history for us. And so I got to go up and meet Wilson. They had worked with him in training. He was a year old when I got him. I went through the training process, got my certification. He got his certification, and we've been rolling since.
So, Amanda, you just talked about the training and certification process. So, obviously, I'm assuming that the dog and the handler goes through it. Can you like give us a little brief synopsis of what that entails?
It's for us, it's been really, really deep obedience therapy, excuse me, obedience work. In other words, making sure that he can sit, stay, come, move when I need him to move, being comfortable around things like walkers and wheelchairs. And even though that's not something he sees a lot on our side daily, it's still things that we come into contact with on occasion. We also had to do like a portion where we went to the fire station, the local fire station, and they pulled the engine out and turned the sirens on to make sure he didn't freak out and he could handle that, which he did. He did a great job. We also did escalators, stairs. We did a lot of different things. And so that basic obedience turned into his certifications.
And so does the handler. Do you go personally through any kind of training to be the handler? I mean.
I did for I went with when I went to Virginia and met Wilson and Miss Sunny. That's when I did my training. What I was up there, I think about a week. Is that right, Miss Sunny? I think that was about
Pretty
it.
close, yeah.
So,
And so you're the only handler in your department, or?
no, I'm not. We also have Grace, who came through Miss Sunny and Canine Caring Angels as well. She is a Golden Doodle as well. She is about two. And then we have three Dalmatians as well, who are education dogs and also therapy dogs. Now they're trained through a different trainer, but they're great as well. Unfortunately, though, our Dalmatians are getting ready to retire because their handler, they're handled by the same person, and we affectionately call them our spotters, and we affectionately call her Mama Spotter. And Mama Spotter is getting ready to retire, so they'll be retiring shortly too.
Okay. So you mentioned that you got the dog, or Wilson came from Sunny, American Canine Caring Angels. So Sunny, can you just like give us some information about your program and what you I guess departments reach out to you to get dogs and train and how that process works?
So we get a lot of calls. It was great when Captain Buck Best, when he was with Fairfax, he was the first one to ever start. He really is the one who lit the fire for the Firefox program. I wasn't sure if that was okay. But he reached out, and honestly, I think he was very at arm's length to begin with, just to make sure that everything was done properly. And then shortly after that, he wound up getting a dog that he used with the fire department as well. But the purpose we're we have a couple of different programs, and the one in Fairfax was the first one, so we've learned a lot. Amanda is fantastic because she has Wilson with her all the time. She is the primary handler, and we have found that that is the best program versus just having a firehouse dog that's at a fire station and has multiple handlers, because when you get too many cooks in the kitchen, you never know how it's going to come out. So our program of choice is always to have a primary handler that comes down, learns the training when we place the dog, goes through everything that Amanda said. It's a long day. It's like an 8-hour day for the actual test. We start at the fire station. We do an orientation. We run the gauntlet. We do the fire sirens. We do the meet and greets with the firemen. We've already trained our dogs that when the bells go off, or the announcements, the dog knows if he's at a station that he has to go to his kennel and wait there until the firefighters return on the call. We go to a children's reading program at the library. We go to the nursing homes. We go to the mall. We go up downstairs, elevators, escalators, and we will finish that day at a restaurant where, if we're training 20 dogs at a time, all 20 of them are together. They're all under the table, quietly unseen, while we have a meal. So it's a long day, but I looked a lot into different programs before we initiated Canine Caring Angels, and we wanted a higher standard. And I would put our program up against anyone's out there, because I know they can handle. Most of the time, our therapy team doesn't always handle crisis. It's not as intense as it is with the firehouse dogs. But when we get a call for a therapy team, if it's in, for example, many years ago, there was a shooting in Maryland, and I knew that our dogs could be jammed into buses side by side, no matter what the breed, what the size, what the age, drive up to Maryland, go to the mall, do what we needed to do with, we were there supposedly for customers when they were coming back into the mall, but what we found were the people in the store were really the ones that needed the extra support for those couple of days, and then get back in those jam buses and come home. And I know our dogs can handle it because of the training that they've been through. So when we have the first responder dogs, there are additional tasks that we want them to do. They have to be able to handle all kinds of distractions. They have to be able to handle loud noises. They have to be able to go to their kennel when they need to be out of sight. They need to be able to be good with kids and the elderly and the wheelchairs and anything that we can throw at them. Storms, siren. Well, sirens are pretty easy for the first responder dogs because they're exposed to it a lot. But it's all in how they handle it. And if there's any level of anxiety, then we know we need to work them through that. So we do all of that before we put them together with the firefighter. So really, when the firefighter comes in, it's almost like a turnkey process to a certain extent. They just know how to need to know how to maintain the training and how to communicate with the dog so that they can work together as a team. When they're certified, they are certified as a team. So it's they have to have that connection.
So you supply the dog then for the if a department calls you and says they're interested in starting a therapy support dog program, you actually have dogs there that you'll match with the person that they want to be their handler.
Yes, and if we don't have them, then we have a very select few of breeders that we will go to because we know the quality, like Karen at Hidden Mystery Farms. She's got
Yes.
been doing this forever. Another one that we use is Laura McComas, and she has a lot of the Aussie Doodles, and they're fantastic. I work with the ladies. Some of them now work for me, so I know the quality of the dog. There's nothing wrong with rescue dogs. They're great dogs. I mean, that's how I started my company, was with a street dog a long, long time ago. But when you're talking about longevity for service, whether it's a service dog or a first responder dog, we go to the breeders because, hi Benji, because we want to have pets. We want to make sure that they're as healthy as they can be, as temperament-wise, that we know the longevity, all of that. And we get that from the breeders.
Okay. So is there like you mentioned Rottweilers, is there a specific type of dog that usually works better than a different a breed of dogs or?
So, no, I mean, I stand firm on if the dog can do the task, the dog can do the cat task. But there are some breeds that are require more handling or more energetic. Dutch Shepherds, Malinois, Australian Shepherds, German Shepherds, all of them have high energy. They're not couch potatoes. So, and that's why a lot of those, their sport dogs are their working dogs for a reason. But when you're talking about doodles, or Havanese's, they have a lot of energy, but they have a lot of downtime too. They can be very snuggly couch potatoes, but like all dogs, they need exercise and they need training.
You mentioned that sometimes it's like just one handler. Like I know Amanda has Wilson all the time in Memphis, and then you mentioned there's some agencies, I guess, that just have the dog in the fire station.
Yes, and I prefer to have a primary handler and then a secondary handler. You always need a secondary handler in case you go away on vacation, you get sick, anything like that. You want to have a backup. But we do have one in California, El Cajon, California, and they've been extremely successful. They've got two or three of our dogs out there now. But let me tell you, when we go down there to train, we are training 25, 30 firefighters all day long, every one of them. And they've got a great attitude and they've been amazing with Yara and the Jax, the other dogs. But as a rule, I still normally like the primary handler and the secondary handler. And then the dog can go home with that primary handler when they want to. They get the right amount of downtime as well.
So, have you seen, or do you feel, I mean, obviously, have you seen that therapy dogs help with people opening up, like with mental health issues? We've briefly talked on the subject of traumatic calls and such. So when they see a dog, do you think some people that are like going through something because they've been left, like a firefighter, for example, has been on a really traumatic call and you know it's bothering them, but there's still that macho kind of attitude in the fire service that I'm fine, I don't need anything. So do you think when a therapy dog or support dog comes to the scene, do you think that helps the person kind of open up? Like they obviously they see the dog and the dog kind of gravitates to people, but do you think the person after that kind of shield comes down or no?
I
Absolutely.
do. I know Amanda has probably a ton of stories.
Well, I'm just thinking very specifically. We had a apartment fire last year, and unfortunately, we lost some children in it. And we got on scene, and it was so somber, just like you said. Everybody's, you, Lisa, you know how firefighters are. You know how our sense of humors are, and there was none of that. It was extremely quiet, and so we get on scene, and Wilson does Wilson's thing, and he kind of makes his way to everybody. That's just kind of how he is, and he goes around and sees everybody. And I can't say that it was because of him, but I will say that I noticed that by the time we got ready to leave, they were being more of a firefighter. They were laughing, they were cutting up, and you could see there was, you could literally, in my opinion, feel the tension release. You could feel it coming down. And so much so that the officers, the police officers who were helping us block the scene and stuff, were like, "Hey, can we pet him? Can we see him?" And they were being, I don't want to say treated. They were being affected by Wilson being there as well. It's a very, very visible, palpable thing on a scene. It really is. It's amazing to watch. It really is.
So, were you going to add something or?
Well, I was going to say Amanda probably has a ton of stories. Michigan, she sees it more first up close and personal than I get to once the dogs leave. But I know that a good therapy dog always knows who's in need. They make like you said with Wilson, they make their rounds. And I have a dog that works with victims of human trafficking, and I have seen her hone in on the person that is needed all the time. The beauty about therapy dog is, and especially if you're macho, if there's a language barrier, whatever it is you don't have to have a conversation with the dog. You can just pet them, your blood pressure goes down, you start to relax, the anxiety starts to go away, and the dog just sits there and loves you, passes no judgment whatsoever. And I think that that is huge, especially if you're in a moment of crisis and you can't express how you feel. You don't have to with a dog. And I think that's why they can be so monumentally important at that time, because they take that stress away. Sometimes a dog can do something for a person that another human being just can't do at that moment.
And I could kind of attest to that. We had a pretty significant fire, I don't know, 6 years ago maybe, where we had multiple fatalities in a warehouse. And the next morning, the fire started at 11 o'clock at night, and the next morning, probably about 10 in the morning, all the same crews were pretty much still there. I'm not even sure who showed up with the dogs, but they had therapy dogs. And people were like, at the start, the machismo, get these dogs, can't be over here, this is, the get the dogs away from here kind of thing. And then they're like, no, they're therapy dogs. And you saw the people that were in there removing the bodies and stuff, kind of how Amanda was saying, there was like this somber feeling, and it's like, I can't believe this happened kind of thing. And then once you see the dog, and I personally, I could attest to it, you see the dog and it's just like, oh, look at the dog kind of thing, kind of like when you see a baby. I mean, like, correlated to like, oh, look at the dog, and the dog, you're right, the dog kind of knows who to gravitate towards.
Well, I jokingly, actually, it's not really a joke. People ask me all the time, how do I know my program works? And it's hard to quantify sometimes, and it's hard to put that into words sometimes, but this is the one thing I know. And you saw this down at Women in Fire in Orlando. If I walk in a room or into a fire station and I don't have him with me, it's not, "Hey, Chief," or for those who've been working with me a long time, "Hey, Amanda," it's, "Where's Wilson and why do you not have him with you?" And that's how I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's working, because they look for him. They'll come into my office, "Hey, Chief, can I pet Wilson?" And of course you can. Here he is. But that's how you, for me, I know it works because of that, you know. So I don't even know how many of you guys in fire, women in fire knew my name, but y'all knew Wilson.
I didn't. It was the Memphis girls.
That's right. That's okay. We'll take
Here for you.
that too.
Memphis girls are so I mean, we talked about the dogs and stuff, and I mean, is there any liability for departments having the dogs, or is that worked out prior? Like the temperament of the dogs, I'm sure, is tested prior, and you're not going to put a dog that has the
Correct.
possibility of being like.
Right. But, you know, I get the privilege of working with our Tennessee Task Force 1, our Urban Search and Rescue Group, prior to becoming Wilson's handler and training dogs with them. And Deborah Barnett, the coordinator, always told me any dog, any day. And a dog is still a dog. Now, the training they go through, the test, temperament testing they go through, the training the handler goes through are all things that go into play to help prevent that. Not only will is Wilson certified through Canine Caring Angels for therapy work or comfort canine work, as we try to call it, but he also is trained and certified as a canine good citizen through the AKC and an urban canine citizen through the AKC, which just adds layers of training and testing so that we know he's capable of doing these things. And I'll be very honest with you, if something ever happened with Wilson, I'm immediately taken to the vet because I'm going to want to know what's wrong with him, because that's just not Wilson. That is so not my dog. He's just, you've met him. He's just not, that's just not him.
He's just like a big puppy, even though he's not a puppy.
Yes.
Like a big puppy
And
dog, it's not a puppy.
he is. That's right. That's him. The big 65-pound puppy.
So,
Miss Sunny, go ahead, Lisa. I'm
no,
sorry.
go ahead, Matt, go ahead.
Oh, I should just ask Miss Sunny if she had anything to add to that.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a same thing that we do with the schools or the sheriff's department or any of those places. We always recommend that they get medical insurance for the dog for exactly that reason. It could be that they stepped on something, they caught their nail. It's always better to just be over prepared than to be under prepared. And most of the time, you know, if you feed your dog, you groom your dog, you do the snout to tails and things like that that we teach you to make sure you're going to have a healthy dog that's going to last a long time. But it's just better to be safe than sorry. And then we there's for some of the fire stations, they require liability insurance in addition to, because a dog is still a dog any day. And it's usually not very expensive. There are a couple of programs out there. It usually runs you, I think, anywhere from like $400 to $600 a year. And some of the fire houses that we work with have to have that in addition to, and others have not required it. So it's kind of a basis to basis.
So with the I mean, I think we could all agree that within probably the last 3 years now, mental health is being seen more as something that needs to be addressed prior, or you know, have things in place, policies in place, procedures in place to deal with mental health and try to, you know, address it even maybe before something happens. So with the that, have you seen more departments and agencies coming to you, Sunny, trying to start a Or I mean, probably people probably reach out to you too, Amanda, from the area,
Yeah.
trying to start a therapy support dog program because of the I mean, we hear a lot about peer support, but have you more agencies reached out wanting to start a therapy?
Yes.
It's definitely increased. And for us, the phone has rung more, a lot more since COVID. After COVID, it seemed that people were just much more aware of what a dog could bring, because they're starting to run into a lot of therapy dogs. They're starting to see firsthand the impact that just having a well-behaved dog around that you can cuddle with for a few minutes, the difference that it makes. But we really, our phones started ringing off the hooks during and towards the end of COVID.
I can see that.
Yeah, I get requests on our program probably every couple of months. So, and I'm glad to share anything I know about it, because I believe in our program so much. But we get quite a few requests. Of course, Miss Sunny also brags on us a lot too. So she'll send the folks to us to ask about our protocols and MOUs and such. So, but I don't believe in reinventing the wheel. Captain Best was great and shared with me a lot of his stuff, so we were able to adapt it, and I'll be glad to do the same with what we have.
And I mean, I know when I thought to do this topic, I was just kind of thinking that you see support therapy dogs just like kind of in the fire service. But I was recently in an airport and someone had a therapy support dog in the airport. And it
Yes.
people were like, why do they have that dog here? And then this man was like really irate that his flight was screen with the gate agent that the flight was delayed, like it was her fault that there was weather that made the flight delayed. But the lady brought the dog over there and he calmed down. It was pretty impressive to see the guy kind of calm down with the dog. First he was like, and then the dog obviously knew the guy was irate because the dog sat there. And I was like, this is pretty interesting watching. So yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people probably do just think of therapy and support dogs. You see them a lot more now, I think, not even in the fire service. Am I right or am I wrong?
You're right. And part of that is because they've done so many studies that actually prove as soon as a dog walks in a room, people's blood pressures and heart rate and pulses go down and you immediately start getting a calming sensation. Now, of course, unfortunately, there's a caveat of if somebody's scared of dogs or whatnot. But I've even had a situation here at my academy, here at my fire department, where there's one person who's just not a dog person and unfortunately was attacked by a pit bull at one time. But their attitude towards Wilson's changed over the years a lot and not nearly as spooked or anything. And so that's awesome to watch too. And he's actually been a very big supporter of the program. He's told people, I'm not a dog person, but I see where he does good for everybody else. And that says a lot in itself too.
That's funny that you said that, because I was not a very big dog person because I got bitten by a dog. And the incident I talked about, the warehouse fire when the dog came, I was like, I mean, I was just standing there and the dog's like, I'm like, okay, this dog's not going to bite. And it was just like, ever since then, I'm like, okay. And then like with Wilson, it was like, okay, so it does. I think somebody that might've had a bad experience with dogs,
yes,
they have a positive experience with the therapy dogs, kind of changes the outlook on the dogs and dogs.
Of course, with Wilson, he's this big fluff ball. So he's not intimidating whatsoever. And that, I think that makes a difference too.
Yeah. And that was the type of dogs that were actually at the warehouse fire as well. So you briefly mentioned police. So do police departments come to you for therapy or for training with dogs, or do police have dogs, or?
Sheriff's departments, police department. We just had a dog that was certified with, believe it's the Fairfax Sheriff's Department. So they are, I was one of those people that was very, very guilty of, I thought firefighters were just really nice people that if they weren't putting out fires, they were getting cats out of the tree. And, they were always at events. They always seemed really happy. And it was actually, even after I met Buck Best and we placed a dog there, I thought it was a nice idea and it seemed to make an impact, but I had no idea of the suicide rate for firefighters. And I work a lot with military veterans. That was my primary focus when I started this. But the suicide rate is almost equivalent to how many soldiers that we lose on a daily basis. There was a presentation that El Cajon gave to the county when they wanted to start their pilot program. And I won't remember the numbers exactly, but it was very close to, it was like 30 or 32 firefighters that they had lost that year to fire-related incidents. And it was like 66 to suicide. And I think when I was sitting there listening to them give their presentation, that was when it really hit what a huge need that there is. And dogs aren't going to fix everything. They're not therapists. They're not
right
all the time, but they do make a positive impact. And sometimes you just need it. And you may not even know how to ask for it yet. But the dogs, they know. They are amazing. They pick up on that tension and that level. We have 200,000 receptors in our nose, and they have something like 600,000. They can pick up the tension and the stress and the depression and all of that. I have seen them do amazing things. And so if we can place them with firefighters, first responders, and it makes a difference to even a fourth of that, it's huge.
I agree. Yeah.
So Amanda, you have Wilson all the time. So what's a typical day with you and Wilson? Like, do you go on?
So Wilson's pretty awesome because he has special permission to take jujitsu. And so he goes with me to jujitsu in the morning before I go to work, and it's amazing because they're just as bad about him not being with me as work is. So if he's not with me for some reason, like maybe I have the day off for whatever reason and I'm not going to work and he's not with me, they're like, where's our mascot? It's hilarious. So a typical day is we're up by about 4:30. We hit the gym when we're going to do jiu-jitsu by 5:30. We're at work by about 6:45. And then we work till about 3:30-ish if things come up. We have now as a chief, I have a SUV of my own. So he has a kennel. We load him up and we go. If anybody calls me at night, we will go wherever we're needed. Everybody, just about everybody in the department has my phone number. They know how to find me or get a hold of me. So we will go wherever. We've even unfortunately had some in line of duty deaths, and we have been there for those families and tried to be there during the services to make that difference too. And it's been amazing to watch that as well. And so he is just a good all around pup. With Miss Pat, I was speaking of our Dalmatians earlier, our spotters. Miss Pat does a lot of education work. And so her pups know how to stop, drop, and roll. They know how to low crawl. They know how to hit the button so the kids can hear what a smoke detector sounds like. And people will be like, can Wilson do that? I'm like, no, Wilson's just good for pets. So, but she has asked us to go with her sometimes on the public education training, just because part of what she does also is teach kids how to approach animals and approach dogs properly. And so we've been in those situations around special needs children, around hospitals, all those things. We have requests to go to the hospitals a lot during Nurses Week as a fun side thing to do. So we'll go there. Just about every emergency room around here, when I was still in the field, knew I had Wilson in. They're like, when are you bringing him to see us? So I had permission to take him into the emergency rooms for the nurses and the doctors, and they absolutely loved seeing him as well. And so it transposes so many boundaries. It really does. We're talking about the police officers. I've actually had several of our police officers say, hey, how do we start this program? And so I don't know how far they've gotten, but I'm hoping that they will be able to open that door and get pups of their own so that they can deal with these things too. Like Miss Honey said, they're not an end all be all, but they sure start and they sure help with these things.
So I'm sure, like Amanda, you guys have policies and procedures or guidelines or something in place for Wilson. And you said, correct. Yeah. So how, in your union, right? So union is on board with this program.
Yes, they are. They've been great about it. And so, like I said, I found out the IFF is actually starting to put policy in place or help policy, build policy and procedure for this as well. And I've heard tell, I haven't been able to quite completely prove this, but that they are actually wanting to start a team that goes nationwide. So anytime somebody has a loss, whoever can go, they load up and go to the department to be there for them, just like their peer counselors would do. And of course, I've told my union president, I'm in, sign me up, Wilson and I will go. But, you know, we'll see how that goes. So, but it's great. You know, I don't know. Like Miss Sunny said, I think to my knowledge, Captain Best was the first one who did this. It may have been someone else, but I've seen it grow so much. I've seen so many different departments placing animals in sheriff's departments, police departments, fire, rescue, global medical services, GMR, global medical response, excuse me, GMR. They have a whole team. I think they have maybe 20 dogs. And they're like us. They'll go wherever they're needed. If they called me today and said, hey, we need you to come to California, and my boss says, okay, I'm loading up, we're going. You know, so, and that's one of the things I think that I've noticed with the therapy dogs and that community is we don't care. If you need us and we can make it happen, we're coming. We're there. It's not just our brothers and sisters. It's everywhere. It's that family. So wherever we're needed, we're going to go.
So has there been any studies or anything done that anybody knows of that actually shows the benefits of a therapy dog, like how it helps reduce the lower blood pressure and such, or?
Yes, and I'm trying to remember the name of the hospital. It's so bad because we were part of the study that we did I'm not going to remember it right now. I'm so sorry. But they have repeatedly shown that They do lower the blood pressure. They release anxiety. Petting a dog several times over and over will release endorphins. And that starts to relax them. That's why when we talk about dogs that help with night terrors and things like that, just being there releases a feeling of feeling safer, feeling warmer. And again, I've seen people sit down and have lengthy conversations with the dog while the dog sits there and just looks and says, okay. And then I've seen people not say a word, just hold on to the dog, cry a little bit, take a couple of deep breaths and inhale, exhale, and then they're okay. And one of the things that we teach all of the firefighters and first responders when they're working with dogs are what we call a snout to tail. And you don't have to have a conversation with the dog, but you start at the tip of the nose. And it's all about massaging the dog and at the same time kind of checking them out to make sure that there's nothing wrong. When we teach kids how to do this in the schools, we say, imagine that you have, what's your favorite color? And they'll say purple. And we'll say, so you have two buckets of purple paint. Do you remember this, Amanda? Two
mm-hmm. buckets of
purple. Put your hands in the paint. And when you get done, your dog's going to be completely purple. And then you start with the snout and you check, you just start to massage. You never take your hands off the dog. You're lifting the lips, you're checking for capillary refills, you're checking the eyes, the ears, and you're working all the way down on the dog. But I have done this repeatedly with kids that have been abused in one form or another, and a lot of them don't speak English. So I will show them how to do this, and you can see the body language start to relax and the tension in the face go away, and then a little bit of a smile, and they just start to relax. And the only thing that they're doing is touching that dog. And you can see that when people are stressed, they show it. They show it in their body. They show it in their face. They show it in their eyes. It's in their lips. And then you can just see that just go away. So anytime that we're placing a dog, we teach the snout to tail, but you only have to show them how to do it once. And they do have to do it during their exam when they're getting certified, but it has such a good value. Plus, it helps you to pay attention to your dog so you can tell if suddenly there's, you know, their bones are popping, or maybe there's a mole there that wasn't there before. That is part of why we do it. But the biggest thing is it's just a great way to bond with a dog and to relax.
Yeah.
And you were asking about studies. The National Institute of Health actually has one, not specifically in the fire services, but on how it improves speed and accuracy and cognitive abilities. And also there was one, I was just looking because I couldn't remember either, Miss Sunny. The U.S. Department of Education's actually done a study as well on how it affects the kids in the classroom and relieves test anxiety and things like that as well. It even comes back to what you were saying, Lisa, about seeing them in the airport. A lot of that also is for people with flight anxiety. So that will help to calm them down as well before they go flying.
I have flown with my dog and never have I ever had someone not come over and say, could I just say hi real quick? And that's even when I'm sitting in the plane and someone is sitting beside me. They just relax you.
Yeah.
I agree.
I mean, there's been studies done on why that is the effect of a dog on a person, or is it just that they're big fluffy animals or? That look friendly?
I don't have a
scientific
study to back it up. I just know that the warmth of that body and the non-judgment of the dog and the way that they can just kind of look into you, it's almost like they look into your soul and they're just, I'm here, I'm not passing judgment. Tell me what you want to tell me or don't tell me and just pet me till you feel better. It just works.
I think
the NIH study kind of gets into some of that, Lisa, talking about why is this working? What's the physicality and the psychological and physiological aspects of that? They kind of get into that a little bit. So to back up there, they even have the biological influences they talk about. So one thing is I think Sunny mentioned this, they say that the dogs, actually seeing the dogs and being around them helps to secrete oxytocin to help, you know, start decreasing all the stress levels and things of that nature.
And I think, Sunny, you just made a good point. They're non-judgmental. So earlier we talked about mental health and the stigma and the machoism or of people, especially firefighters, that I'm tough, I don't need any help or whatever. And you're right, non-judgmental. I mean, I think anyone in the, will admit that when a call is traumatic, it's traumatic. Obviously, we know it affects people different ways, but I think any traumatic call is going to have some effect on everyone on the scene. But some are going to, you know, talk about it, and then others, Amanda, you could probably talk about this. When we first came in, it was employee, I mean, you'd sit around the table and talk after, and they'd be, oh, I'm fine, nothing's going on, great.
Yeah. Yeah. What's for supper?
Yeah. Back to bed if it was in the middle of the night or whatever.
Right.
And then as mental health became more of a non-stigma, it's now some people would open up a little bit more, but some wouldn't. And then you still had the ones that would open up and the ones that didn't want to open up saying, oh, you're just weak. We're tough. We can handle this. And so I think within the last few years, even not even only in the fire service, but you see it like in anything where if I use the NFL, for example, where the guy had the cardiac arrest on the football field 2 years ago, the first thing the NFL came out and said is, hey, we got mental health counselors for the all the people. We got this. I mean, and you see it in more and more occupations now that when something happens, it's like we got to deal with mental health right now, which is.
And you know what? It is good. And one of the unique things for me in my walk with Wilson is that I've never had anybody not just take to Wilson. Even the biggest, toughest guys are always, oh, it's Wilson, you know? And so that's always amazing to watch too, because he's not judgmental at all, but it just is amazing to watch how he just crosses any boundary somebody has. And even if you have a boundary, he's not going to let you keep it for very long, because he's a little persistent sometimes in that, in a good way. But it really is interesting that even the biggest, toughest guy, they don't maintain that exterior. Or even some of the girls I work with are pretty darn tough too and have that same mentality. And Wilson comes in, it's like, Wilson, you know, so just like, everybody knows his name, you know? So
I think part of it, and it's just my opinion, that the dog, because, and Sonny, you said this, their dogs are non-judgmental. So it's like, you know, I mean, you said you saw people sitting there talking to the dog and just, I mean, the dog's just sitting there listening or whatever. So they're getting off their chest what's bothering them and such. And even though no one's really answering them, they're not being judged. So they're getting, I mean, they're releasing the what's bothering them, which we know if you keep that bottled in, it's just going to keep festering. So, I mean, you're right. I think it's the non-judgmental thing that I could sit here and talk to this dog and I don't have to worry about the dog's going to go and tell Joe what I just said or how this call or something. Yeah.
We always say that the beauty of a dog is because they don't judge you. They don't care if you brush your hair. They don't care if you, you know, if you had a bad day, you didn't have a bad day, you lost your job, no matter what's going on, they don't change. They love you unconditionally. And they're sitting right there, always right there. I'm right here for you. What do you need? What can I do for you? Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing about a dog. I always laugh because when I leave my house, I will always forget something. So then I have to come back in. Oh, I forgot my glasses. My dog is so happy to see me. And then I leave again. Oh, wait a minute. I forgot. I got to get my water. I walk back in. My dog's like, where have you been? I'm so happy to see you. And they're like that at the fire stations. They don't slow down. It's Buck Best told me a story when he first got Wally. Was Wally had boundary training, wasn't allowed to go into the kitchen. And when everybody would go out on a call, when they would come back, if they were going into the kitchen, they would stand in line and wait so that they could, each one of them could come by and one way or another pet Wally, whether it was just for a second or get down with them, and then go wash their hands and go into the kitchen. But he said there was actually a line in the hallway because they were waiting their turn to pet Wally. I mean, yes. So it's, you know, and some people might only need to just pat them on the head, and it's, and that's good. Other people need to curl up on the bed with them or take them out for a walk or just play ball with them and just kind of release some of whatever it is going on that day. It's all positive.
True.
So Amanda, can you go over the training? So you said that you got Wilson from Sunny at the American Kingdom of Angels. So what was the process of all that? Okay.
So once we identified Wilson, between Miss Sunny and Miss Karen, his breeder, helping me, you know, figure out kind of the route we were going and picking him out for me. Miss Sunny and her training staff did all the training. And so when I got there, basically it was my job to learn what he already knew and how to direct him. And so I was kind of surprised because the very first night I met him, she's like, okay, he's going home with you tonight, because I had found a booked a hotel that he could stay with me in. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. So I was kind of, I didn't think I'd get to take him home till like the next day or something. So he went home with me and our bonding immediately started right then and there. And so, of course, he's just so mellow. I don't think it bothered him a lick. But so then we went back and they taught me some of the basic commands that night when I got in, and we worked probably about an hour, hour and a half. And then the next day we started really going over everything, and I took part in several classes, that some formal classes and informal training as well. We even went out to eat with them one that day. And then we did that for a couple more days, went to the fire station. And then the last day we concluded by going to the mall, do an elevator, escalator, strollers, walkers. We were able, there happened to be some people with wheelchairs and stuff and strollers, so we got that. And then we concluded it with, like she said, a meal where we sat down and ate with the dogs, because they have to go underneath the table. You're not supposed to know that they're there. And so one of the best compliments you can get is when you get up from a restaurant and you walk out and the dog's with you and people go, I had no idea who was even there. That's a high compliment, because the dog's done his job and done it well. Mm-hmm. So, and we've had that happen a couple of times. It's pretty awesome to watch when they're like, whoa, where did they come from? Because they don't bark, they don't sniffle, they don't whine. They just do their job. They do their thing. They know. So they know. It's even like with flying, for instance. So when I came to Women in Fire in September of 22, Wilson hadn't flown since COVID, you know, so since probably 2019, since he'd flown. So I was a little nervous. So he was picking up on my nerves. And so he was a little nervous too. And you know, I called Miss Sunny, went over layover, Miss Sunny. We're both freaking out, you know, what do I, and, I mean, you couldn't tell it. The crew couldn't tell it. They didn't know he was nervous, but I knew as his handler, because I know that's my job to know. And so I was like, what do I need to do to help him calm down? How can I help my pup? And so she told me what to do. And he and I worked for quite a while during the layover, just healing, sitting down, stay calm, just making him work. Cause that does so much for their brain. You know, when you train like that, that does more in 30 minutes for them than 2 hours of playing ball can do, because they have to work not just their bodies, but their minds too. And he did, he relaxed, he calmed down. And so when we flew home, I took him out for a little run, played with him, kind of got him a little bit tired. And so then he was like, okay, I don't care. And so the flight back, both of them were perfectly fine. And the next flight after our connection going down was fine too, once I kind of worked some of the nerves out of him. But he was picking up on me too. I think it was Miss Sunny who told me it goes down the leash. It travels down the leash. So whatever I'm feeling travels down the leash. And he knows. He knows if I'm upset. He knows if I'm happy, mad. And he's going to do me like he's going to do anybody else. He's going to come over and he's going to hit my hand until I pet him. And that's part of what he does. And the cool thing is I think Miss Sunny kind of talked about this a little bit with another dog. He's never been trained to sniff out serotonin levels or anything like that. But he knows, because he picks up on what the levels are already, because their nose is so amazing. And so automatically he knows. My husband's on the job as well. And so when my husband's had a bad day, because he's still in the field, Wilson knows and he'll go find him. He'll leave me. I'm like, really? What am I, chopped liver? But I can tell, because he goes and finds Dennis and he lays with him. And then it's funny, because a couple of our other dogs will do it too. And we've never trained them. They know, though. They pick it up, they smell it, they sense it, they know, and they go find him to give him comfort, just like he would any other firefighter, paramedic, or anybody on the job.
That's funny that you said that, because I was going to ask that question. Like, when you're at, like, the incident I talked about, there was, you know, 50, 60 firefighters, and he kind of, the therapy dogs they had brought there, they were from some program, I'm not sure where. They kind of knew who to go up to. It was kind of, at the time, I'm like, does the dog know that person? You know, you don't know. It's like, I didn't really know that much about it. First, I was like, why are these dogs here? Like, kind of other people were like, why are there dogs here? And then you saw the vest that they had on them. Yeah. And it was kind of like, oh, well, this is okay. This is interesting. And then they kind of knew who to go up to. It was kind of like, it was the ones that
they do.
Yeah. And it saw, like, you know, the body as we were going through body removals and body removals, they kind of knew who to, and it was like, this is really amazing that they know who to go up to, kind of thing, as opposed to ones that were just standing there waiting to go in that hadn't really done any. I mean, they'd done things, but they hadn't been doing the body
right.
Like, wow, this is so they could.
The interesting thing with Wilson to me is I've never taught him to do this. He does it on his own. And I don't know that, I'm sure there's other dogs that do it, but when we go into a room with a bunch of people, he goes up to each person. I mean, he makes a round. And he may even make a second round, and then he goes to the person that he thinks needs his attention the most. It's really amazing to see because I've never taught him how to do that. So
we found that. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Sunny. I'm done.
So after COVID, we started. We take some of our therapy dogs into the schools, and we teach them during mental health week that they have in the schools. We talk about first responder dogs, and we always talk about Wilson and Wally, and we've got some of the videos, so we show them all of those things. But especially after COVID, there's a classroom that I go into that my dogs will sit while we do a presentation, and then when we play the videos, we cut the dogs loose and they can just wander the room, and they will always without fail go to the kids that are having the hardest time. And I don't know these kids, but the teacher or the instructor will always say, I can't believe that she really needs this. She just lost her brother. Her parents are going through a divorce. She's been real shut down since she's come back to school. The dogs know, and my dog will just go and lay at the feet of that person, or put her head on their lap. And I never have a conversation with those kids, not one-on-one, but my right. dog is doing whatever she's supposed to do. And it's without fail every single time.
It's so amazing. So, I mean, and I could be wrong. Correct me if I've been wrong. I've been using the term interchangeably of a therapy and a support dog. Are they technically the same thing, or are they different?
So there's an ESA, which is emotional support dog. That is not a therapy dog. An ESA is a dog that is your dog at home. You have a bad day, you come home, you hug your dog, you feel better. A therapy dog, for us, a therapy dog is a dog that has been trained in different therapeutic situations. They give and receive affection freely, and they are trained and certified as a team to basically pay it forward.
So do they go through the one certification, or is it kind of like in the fire service where you have to have continually education, or does the dog not need? I know that sounds like a crazy question.
No, we recertify our dogs. So for our regular therapy team, we recertify them every year. For the dogs that are at fire stations, it's a little bit different. They are working every day.
Yeah.
So we know that they're keeping their skill set tight, because if not, I'm going to get a call. So I know
yeah, you will.
So like Wilson would never have to recertify. He's got his hours in. He's doing it every single day. But we have therapy dogs that, you know, they volunteer maybe 2 hours a month, and they're very good. But we make them recertify every year.
Okay, so that would be like an entity, like just some outside entity that has therapy dogs, as opposed to the fire service having it.
We have a therapy team here. At one point, I think we had it for 200 therapy dogs. And then we have different locations throughout the country. So, and those are just normal individuals that have a dog that they've certified as therapy that they go out and they share. So they're part of the therapy team.
I'm sorry, Sunny. I was just going to come back real quick to, you were talking about therapy versus emotional support. Also recognize, Lisa, that there's a complete difference between a service dog as well. A true service dog is giving a specific need for their handler. So whether that's a seizure detection dog or a diabetic detection dog or a PTSD dog that detects serotonin levels and is taught how to give deep pressure therapy to their handler, that is a completely different animal than our therapy dogs or an ESA. The service dog has the right federally to go wherever the handler goes. Now, with Wilson, he has never been denied because I explain what he is and I always get permission first, and everybody's been wonderful to work with him. Even flying, he's always vested, but we call ahead, we get all the arrangements made, we let them know, and then they are extremely gracious to us every time and make sure that we're taken care of. But there is a very big difference between a therapy dog and an ESA dog and a service dog. And I say that because I never want to put a service dog at risk by not following the rules the way that we should for them. Because sometimes it's hard enough for the handling of service dog. And I personally never want to put that burden on them because I haven't done what I should do as a therapy dog handler.
I've said it before, but I'll say it again. If only I could clone you.
No, I don't know about all that. And you, and coming back to one other thing, we have gotten away from the word therapy dog with our guys, even though that's what they are, just out of respect because there is such a stigma with the word therapy. We actually have gotten to where we call our guys comfort canines, trying to, because we want people to, I don't think the word therapy has hindered anything with Wilson by any means, but we do want to take away that stigma of that word because unfortunately there is when there shouldn't be, but there is. So we call our guys comfort canines.
Is that industry standard or just something you guys are doing or?
It's just something I have seen it in other places. I don't know. Miss Sunny may be able to talk to this a little bit better than me. I don't know if that's an industry standard. It's just something we adopted. I think if I remember correctly, Chief Sweat heard it somewhere and she's like, hey, let's do this. It's like, okay, that's fine by me. And so we've trying to make it more open, more accessible and not have that stigma there.
It's actually, so a lot of the terminologies in the industry are starting to change. So like we would call them working comfort canines because they're specifically, they're not for an individual, they're for an organization. The same thing with, we no longer say PTSD service dogs.
Right.
And then it went from PTSD to psychiatric service dogs. And now we say medical alert. Mm-hmm. It's cleaner, it's easier. And hopefully at the end of the day, the public will be able to process it a little bit better.
And that makes sense for comfort canines because as we've talked quite a bit actually about the stigma of mental health and stuff, when you hear therapy, I think it's still, we have these therapy dogs here, there's still going to be a little bit of pushback with some individuals because it's like, I don't need therapy, as opposed right. to a comfort canine where they're going to get the same thing, but you're taking away the stigma of the word therapy, unfortunately.
Right, exactly.
So you mentioned after COVID, you had a lot more people reaching out to you. Was it other entities or fire service, police, every entity or just?
Across the board, but there were a lot of first responders. And I think it was because to a certain extent, so many people were shut in and now they're having to go back out into the public. And if they were shut in and they had anxiety that was not dealt with, now they're going back into the public. And all of that is still there that I think, it's a sad reason for the mental health to become even more to have more focus on it. But at least that was something that was good that came of it because it's out there. You can't ignore it. To ignore it is dangerous. And it's nothing to be ashamed of in this day and age at all. It's just a byproduct of a situation that people have to deal with if they're first responders, and we should be able to do everything we can to help them. And for us here, it's the dogs.
And think about it, you know, the new terminology of compassion fatigue. We went through so much during COVID and there were so many layers to things of how we were trying to make sure that we had all the PPE on and doing this and doing that and the fear of the unknown. And then call volumes went up for just about every service and it got so crazy for a little bit there that your first responders, just a lot of us got tired, you got worn out, and we did lose some compassion. And so having the dogs there helps to, for me at least, in my opinion, and then what Wilson does for me, when COVID was going on, I was actually a field lieutenant at the time, so I was making these calls with my guys. And so being able to come back to the station and have him right there, right then, helped to relieve that stress immediately for me. So I know it helped my guys too, because when I was in the station then, where my office was and my living quarters was way in the far back of the station. So they had a kennel for him up front, because if I left and for whatever reason didn't have him with me, they wanted him with them. And so they had a kennel for him up front so that they could easily put him up when they got calls. But they were the same way. As soon as they walked through the door, they got him out and played with him. And so I think it truly helped keep us human. I mean, I don't, and that may sound kind of bad, but I think it did, because you know as well as I do, Lisa, it's not hard to get jaded in what we do. And I think that this helped to keep some of that from happening and help keep burnout from happening. That's, of course, my opinion. I can't necessarily, once again, quantify that or qualify that, but just watching what happens with Wilson is what makes me say that.
I would kind of agree with you on that, because the stress level, I think, in any fire department across the United States during COVID was up because of the unknown and how's it, I mean, especially in different parts of the country as well as, I mean, and it's, you're right. It's like, there was a lot of stress. There was a lot of bickering. There was a lot of,
yeah, not enough PPE, you know, those fears there, those were true, valid fears.
They really
concerns.
We're about out of time. Does anyone have anything they'd like to add?
Just going to say, if I can help in any way for anybody who wants to start a program, I'm always here. I may not know everything, but I'll be glad to tell them my story and how I went about getting Wilson and how I went about getting this set up. And like I said, I'll share any of our protocols and MOUs and such as well. There's no sense in reinventing a wheel when you can take what we have and make it work for you.
So what we've talked about today is that therapy dogs play a vital role in providing emotional support and comfort to various groups, including first responders and in some instances, citizens. They help. They're also known as now, to take the stigma away, as sometimes they're known as comfort canines now. So I'd like to thank my guests for being a part of the radio show, and thank Fire Engineering again for allowing us to be part of your monthly podcast. Thanks to all our listeners and members of Women in Fire. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn, and check out our website, womeninfire.org. And we will be having our international conference in September, begins September 11th in San Diego, California. So we hope to see everyone at our conference. Again, thank you to my guests.
Thanks for having us.
Did you know the risk of cancer does not stop at the scene of the fire? Firefighters are constantly exposed to diesel exhaust fumes and other airborne toxins that get trapped inside the station, leading to cancer. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip. Through the combination of MagnaGrip exhaust removal systems and AirHawk air purification systems, only MagnaGrip eliminates 100% of all cancer-causing toxins within the station. Learn more at MagnaGrip.com.
In the world of firefighting and public safety, reliability is key. That's why for over two decades, first responders nationwide have trusted the Fire Store as their go-to source for essential equipment, apparel, and accessories. From top-of-the-line firefighting gear like helmets, boots, and thermal imaging cameras, the Fire Store has it all, tailored to the specific needs of our heroes on the front lines. But they don't stop there. Their extensive selection also includes EMS supplies, safety apparel like flame-resistant clothing and high-visibility gear, as well as a wide array of tools from hand tools to vehicle extrication tools, supporting public safety professionals in their duties. Partnered with industry leaders, the Fire Store's commitment to quality and excellence is unmatched, because when it comes to protecting communities, there's no room for compromise. Join the thousands of first responders who rely on the Fire Store. Visit thefirestore.com online or in-store today. The Fire Store, your reliable partner for fire and public safety equipment.